From Salesforce Studios, this is Blazing Trails.
Welcome to Blazing Trails. I'm Laura Woods from the Salesforce blog. I am so excited to share today's conversation with two cultural icons who are changing the world, both in their sports and in their larger communities, Megan Rapinoe and Ibtihaj Muhammad. Megan helped lead the U.S. women's soccer team to their 2015 and 2019 victories at the FIFA Women's World Cup. And Ibtihaj was the first Muslim American woman to earn an Olympic medal while wearing her hijab. Both women have used their platforms as star athletes to stand up for equality. And today, they talk about how to bring your full, authentic self into everything you do and how being an ally for equality plays a significant role. But before we get to that conversation with these amazing women, a word about WordPress VIP, who is making this show possible. WordPress VIP is the digital publishing solution that powers the world's top media companies, as well as marketing platforms for some of the best-known brands like Time and Facebook. Later on in this episode, you'll hear more of our conversation with their CEO, Nick Gernert. And now, let's have a listen to Megan and Ibtihaj speaking with Sue Su, Chief People Officer at Time.
Please welcome champions on and off the field, Ibtihaj Muhammad and Megan Rapinoe. Awesome. It's just like the Olympics, right? Here, we're cheering.
This is so basically what it's like.
It's basically what it's like. I'm actually super psyched that we're here at something called Dreamforce, because it really is, you are the personification of the force of your dreams, really creating the reality that you've made for yourself, the progress that you've helped push forward, how you've shown up, and the wins and the victories both on and off the field. So I'd love to hear a little bit more about how that all got started. So Ibtihaj, why don't we start with you? How did the fencing journey begin?
I grew up in New Jersey, about 30 minutes outside of, are you from Jersey?
Yes, I am.
Very exciting.
Awesome. Woo, who else
is
from Jersey?
There's a lot of us here, very excited.
Very great.
I grew up about 30 minutes outside of New York City, Maplewood, New Jersey. And in our family, my parents just really pushed this idea of sports. We didn't have much of a choice. It was like, which sport do you want to play? And as a Muslim kid who would eventually wear hijab, it was really difficult, this idea of uniform for me. When we think of the uniform and what that means, there's this idea of unity. It kind of creates this family-like bond. And for me as a kid, I didn't have that because I was always adding something to it to make it more modest.
Yeah.
And at 12, I discovered fencing. I was at a stoplight. My mom and I saw fencing in a school cafeteria. My mom said, don't know what that is, but I want you to try it out. And the rest is kind of history. I
really
went to the Olympics after that.
That's what normally happens when I go to the grocery store as well. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And what about what your mom saw in the window said, I'm going to find out more about that.
Well, she probably got tired of going to the sporting goods store to like add stuff to uniforms. But it was really this unique opportunity for me as a young athlete to participate in a sport that uniquely accommodated my religious beliefs. And it was the first time I really felt a part of a team. I was 12 when I started fencing, and I didn't know that there would be opportunity for me in sport where people didn't see me for being, African American, or didn't see me for being Muslim, or didn't see me for being a girl. It was really just about, could you win?
Mm-hmm.
And so my mask, once I put my mask on, I kind of felt like a superhero in a bit, like in a way.
Yeah.
Because it was really like, how hard can you work and can you win?
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And Megan, how about you?
Oh, take it all the way back.
We're going all the way back.
I mean, I think the catalyst, I'm one of six kids, I'm a twin, and we're the youngest. The brother above us is 5 years older, so I think probably as a babysitting mechanism, we were dragged everywhere. One of the places we were dragged was soccer fields. My older brother played, Brian. So I think, having a built-in buddy right on the side where my mom could just be like, do your thing over there. Brother was practicing, and we kind of fell in love with it from there. And then obviously, progress from there. But I think it was just being able to play and kind of having that freedom and, having someone that you could actually play with kind of was the catalyst of loving the game, I guess.
That's awesome. Both of you have spoken so powerfully about team and what that means and how you show up for each other, including, you know, once you're there, it really is, can you win versus what do you look like and where do you come from? How do you, in a world in which we have this amazing opportunity to stand up for things we believe in, how do you balance both being seen for who you are and what you're proud of, as well as stepping on that field, letting that all go, and letting the actions speak for themselves?
Mm-hmm. I don't really try to balance it.
Yeah. I love it.
Yeah, I don't think you need to, like, it's funny you talk about the idea of a uniform, and, like, I always hate uniforms.
Yeah.
Like, I love you, Nike, but, like, I hate the idea of a uniform. The thought of 20 people all wearing the exact same thing at the same time in the same way, and, like, they never want modifications.
Yeah.
Like, the, you know, the people or whatever. And it's just, like, why can't you bring your own personal style to it and just, like, express yourself in some sort of uniformity, but just express yourself in the way that you want to or that you see fit. And I think I take that, you know, to your question. I don't really try to balance at all. Obviously, I have to wear a uniform while we're out there, and you are part of a team. But I think, you know, for us, at least on the national team, we would much prefer everybody's personalities to be out there front and center, understanding that when we let everyone free and let everyone just be themselves, and that's how we get the best out of the team. So I don't really think about, like, oh, now I'm on the field, or now I'm, you know, doing a speech, or now I'm here, or whatever. I'd probably lose track and do something wrong. So I figured I'd just, it's all the same thing to me.
Yeah.
You're just representing yourself, you're representing your country, I think if you're authentic and you're coming from that place all the time, then it really doesn't matter what space you're in or where you're at. You just get to live.
Yeah. Love that.
Yeah. I think that it's that opportunity that exists to just kind of go out there, you show up, you bring whatever your best attribute is to the field of play. And I think that that's one of the, to me, that's the highlight of being part of a team, right?
Yeah.
You can, especially like in my sport where we're facing these three other people, and there's just three of us on the team, we're facing these three other athletes, and you're going to have an easier time with some countries or some athletes versus others, but you always show up for one another. And if you have, like, and as we know, sports happen in ebbs and flows, and you may have like a down moment. You may not have the best day, but maybe your teammate shows up that day. And it's not about, like you said, where you're from or this identity that you necessarily bring to the field of play. And I feel like if I did bring that with me all the time, it would almost feel like a weight I would have to carry around.
Yeah.
And I think that sport gives me the opportunity to just go out there and I don't know, live my best life through expressing myself, I guess, with a weapon in my hand.
Right. Yep. You are a superhero, obviously. it's interesting. I mean, it's incredibly inspiring to hear how you stand up and bring your fullest self, and that's what it's all about. And I think for those of us or those who might be in the audience or watching who may not have that courage or might be scared, I remember growing up as a little kid having that same feeling, having been told by other people of color, yeah, you know, Asians don't really count. Or like, you know, what kind of advice would you give to, you know, children growing up who are seeing you and seeing how you're showing up in the world? How amazing that they have this moment to be able to watch that. What kind of advice would you give to them?
I mean, I lived for Megan during the World Cup, as like all of us did,
yes.
Right? But
yes.
I think... You know, what I think the highlight was just to see this expression of like unapologetic self.
Yeah.
And it's such a freeing thing to make this decision that I don't care what you think. I don't care what you think. I don't care what you think. Like, this is who I am. You can accept it or you could not, but actually we don't care.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that was something that for me, I had this switch as a kid because I was bullied. And yeah. I was so often made to feel like a square fitting in circle spaces for a multitude of reasons. Sometimes it's about my skin, sometimes it's about my hijab. And I was just like, you know what? This is ridiculous. I'm gonna be myself, and I actually don't care what you think. And this is why I live for you during the World Cup. I mean, in general, but also I just love people.
I know.
I just love the idea of people just going out there and be like, actually, this is who I am, and we don't need you to like it.
Yeah,
and that's okay.
Yeah,
yeah,
love it. And I think, you know, and you both talk about being allies, and we, you know, we just saw that wonderful video, and I think we've got amazing allies in the audience, both you know, from all over the world. I think the Kohana is here. And I think we have Faith Force also here and around the world. Salesforce has done a great job about, you know, building those communities and really helping everyone support each other. And what does that look like for you off the field? You know, do people ask you those questions? Something we think about is now that you've had success, people are always reaching out to you, right? Wanting a little bit of a piece of you. And what does that feel like in terms of asking people to show up for each other? How do you pay that forward in a way that empowers everyone to actually show up for others? How does that look like for you?
I think just touching a little bit on what Abdi was saying about kind of not caring, and I think it's easier to do that when you're in the majority group. I think it's easier for me to do that in ways I'm not, you know, constantly being harassed about my hijab or, you know, my skin color or whatever it may be. And I think for people in the majority group, like I was watching the video and it just kind of struck me, because we always say like, oh, you know, you can't understand someone's, you know, someone else's perspective or whatever. But it's like, you know what? I think you kind of can. Like, you just believe the person that's saying it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, yeah, it's like, yeah. So it's like, I don't need to like wear, you know, hijab or to understand exactly what it's like to be Muslim or a person of color to just be like, whatever, cool, I got you. And then I'll stick up for you in all of these other spaces where maybe you aren't in or you don't have access to, or these are the people that are bullying you. Like, that's our job mm-hmm. as an ally, as a person in the majority in, you know, some sort of way, is to kind of like collect and correct our own people. And to signal to people that, you know, maybe are different or whatever, it's like, you're actually not that different. Like, I don't need to, you know, personally understand it to the nth degree to understand it mm-hmm. and to validate it and just be like, cool, I got you. And now we're just humans. Mm-hmm. So I feel like that's the way I show up as an ally, is to like listen and actually believe what people are saying. Because I always feel like if you're not totally down with it or you can't understand the perspective, I'm like, well, they just told you.
Right.
So you either didn't listen or you don't believe it or you're not validating it. And those things for me are just really easy things. Like, if I believe Ipti, then I do understand it and I can have that empathy, and then I can change my behavior and change the behavior of people around me and signal to other people like, this is how we're going to interact together mm-hmm. and this is how we're going to treat each other. So I feel like, you know, being a white person is like, we just need to like signal to not only people who, you know, maybe different in some kind of way, but also to ourselves and to the people around us that, like, this is how this is going to go down, yeah. not any other way.
Mm-hmm. Woo! Right? A word. Megan.
Yeah.
And thinking about representation, how we show up for each other, both of you have done a lot off the field. And recently, congratulations again on the clothing line that you've rolled out this week.
And we got a collab in the mix.
I know, we've got
Don't
a collab. And you've had a clothing line for a couple years now, right?
Yeah.
Luella and Reink. That we're announcing today that we're going to do a collaboration, right, guys?
You heard it here first.
You heard it here first. Yeah. There's going to be a collaboration.
Free Luella.
It's all happening. But tell me why, you know, what did it mean for you to choose clothing? Mm-hmm. What did it mean for you to choose something that's so personal and representative of how you show up every day?
Well, I've always been a bit of a problem solver, and I have no background in clothing or business or anything like that, but I knew that there was a void within the modest fashion community. If you wanted to find a long sleeve floor length dress here in the United States, you are often ordering it from overseas. paying like exorbitant shipping fees, whatever. If you did find companies here, there were things that were a bit dowdy or dark, maybe something your grandma would wear. So not fashionable. And that's where Luella comes in. We manufacture everything here in the United States. We work with female manufacturers that employ women. So we feel like we're a conscious clothing line at the same time. Yeah. And we won't try to keep everything super affordable, but also fashionable and, again, modest. So I feel like it was providing something to a community that I'm a part of. Like, as a kid, I didn't have the opportunity to buy clothes like this. It was really hard to find. I was always layering from, like, these really cheap stores and fast fashion, and I just wanted to be a part of the change.
Awesome.
Yeah. Dope.
Well, it's like, it's all about like representation, right? Everybody always says that, like, we gotta have representation, but like, what does that actually mean? Totally. That means like not being able to find something cute because no one thought of it, because no one's in the room. So like, we kind of had the same sort of feeling, like, we, you know, Reink will start in clothing and hopefully branch off to many things, but we're kind of like, why can't I find a dope pair of sweatpants that actually fit me? Like, I don't fit men's extra small. My hips are not this wide, and my shoulders are not this wide. So it's like trying to, you know, represent something in the culture and in, you know, clothing. It's something that every, you know, it's like one of the things that every single person pretty much on this planet does every day is get dressed. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's a big stressor for a lot of people who don't fit into this like perfectly binary world. And for us, it's like, we don't want to be this like androgynous brand. That just means looking like a lesbian. That's just like looking like a boy lesbian. Like, that's just like looking gay. So it's like, even the like androgynous is trying to be all inclusive. It's like, you're not inclusive. You just like, you know, slapped androgynous on like smaller men's clothes. So how do we actually design something?
I didn't know if I could laugh. I was like, should I laugh?
Yes, it's like, let's just call it what it is. Like, you know, it's pretty simple. It still doesn't fit anyone, you know, it still doesn't work. So like, yeah, how do we, and you probably feel this, you know, the same way, but we definitely felt this starting our company. Like, we just never felt like we were really fully represented. It was always through someone else's lens. So, and it's not always a bad thing. Oftentimes it's mutually beneficial, but whether it's Nike and the clothes we wear for Nike or the way we're represented in an ad campaign or the brand ideas or whatever it is, we kind of just got to the point where we're like, yeah, we can do this better. Like, we actually know exactly how we feel. We know for us what's missing in the market, and we feel like, why not us just give it a chance? We have as good a chance as anybody else doing it. We might as well use the experience that we have and the perspective that we have to do something for ourselves that we feel like other people are feeling as well.
Mm-hmm. All right. How's the reaction been?
Glowing. Yeah.
Yeah.
We think great.
Yeah.
Sales are great. People seem to be really into it. The stuff is actually really nice, like on the hand. It's well constructed. Mm-hmm. You know, for our first like major drop, we're pretty excited about. There's of course like a million things that we see when we look at it. We're like, everything's fine. But overall, we're really happy with it. The way everything came out, the way things fit on different body types and different genders and all that. So we're so proud and so happy that it's actually like a living thing in the world.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And to go back to everyone wearing the same uniform on the field at the same time, tell us about the World Cup.
Yeah.
I was there. I wasn't playing.
Oh, my God. I had to do pink hair to get out of the uniform, basically. I'm like, I need to change it up. The World Cup was insane. I mean, I just, obviously the soccer part of it was great. We did the thing we were supposed to do. We won. Amazing. But yeah, to be able to transcend so far past the sport is the best part of it. I feel like we gave people a vehicle and an inspiration, motivation to talk about these things that people want to talk about and sometimes just really hard. Like,
wow.
You're the only woman in the office or one of a few or whatever, and you're going to like bring like equal pay. You're going to be like, oh, hey, hi, it's me again, you know, and now you have like this kind of like fun way to bring things up.
Totally.
And I think that we sort of showed people a way forward and a path forward in this time that's divisive, to say the least, a way to express exactly how you feel, what you stand for, and who you're with, without it being this really negative name-call-y kind of thing. We can leave that to other people, but for us, it's like, this is what we're about, this is who we are, this is who we stand with, and we're proud of that, and also, we're awesome, and we did the thing, so like, we're gonna go hard.
So you were there.
I was.
And how was that?
Well, I wasn't going to miss a chance to see this. I knew we have the same management team, so I was like, oh, I'm going.
Yeah.
Like, we have to make this happen. Yeah.
But it was Find so, a way, but she gone.
I know. It was so fun to watch it in person. I mean, it's one thing to see it unfold through the news or watch it on television, but to be out there and support, especially just like Olympic teammates and share and a lot of the journey, you know, like to be an ally, like Megan said, to show up for them, whether that be in using your social platforms or even physically be there. But I support everything that the women's team stood for in that moment. And I think that Megan's like so sweet. She's like, we, which I think is awesome because it's a team. But I feel like she really spearheaded this idea of like be unapologetic and like stand up for communities that that often go unheard. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate so much of the work that you did during the World Cup and even the things that you do now. Clearly I'm a fan and also a friend, but I mean, I'm obviously like rambling at this point, but I feel like it means so much. It really does. And I think especially for us as female athletes, I think that oftentimes our ideas and the things that we stand for aren't as often heard as they are when they come from male athletes. So, I don't know. I'm just here for Megan today.
We're going to take a quick break now and bring you a conversation with the CEO of WordPress VIP, Nick Gernert. WordPress VIP is the leading provider of enterprise WordPress, and they power companies like Facebook, Spotify, and others. My colleague, Matt Jaffe, sat down with Nick at Dreamforce to discuss how his company is grappling with topics like the future of work and digital transformation.
You know, at Salesforce, we talk a lot here about our core values: customer success, trust, innovation, equality. What are your core values at WordPress VIP, and how do you guys put them into action? How do you live those values every day?
Gosh, that's a great question. So the values that we hold at VIP are really sort of, they all sort of stem from where WordPress comes from in sort of an open source, in the open source community. And things we think about that we hold close and in values are, you know, transparency in our work and in what we provide. So just core to who we are is sharing and being open about how's the software work? How do we work as an organization? Like there's really, we want you to feel as comfortable about our operations, about how we work as you could be in this. And that for us just is a fundamental element of trust that if we go back to even the open source software, like this is software that's developed in the open and anyone can contribute to, anyone can see how it works. And you should be able to do that. There's real freedom in being able to do that because core to what we want out of folks too is this idea that you can really own, you know, your customer experiences. In an enterprise context, it's always, there's a real tension around like vendor lock-in, or there's a bad history of thinking about like vendor lock-in, and I would love to do something better, but I'm kind of in this thing now and I can't.
And vendor lock-in being what?
Vendor lock-in meaning like I've put a critical part of my business's operations in one piece of software and there's not really an easy, you know, there's not an easy way to extract myself from that.
I'm just stuck now.
I'm stuck that. I'm either stuck in that proprietary software or I'm stuck with a small group of engineers that actually know how it works. Think back to Capgemini and like four people understand how this thing works. I get stuck in a platform or in a technology.
No flexibility, no room to maneuver out of there.
Yeah. And so core to our values is just like, okay, we want to open that up. Like we want to come at the model in a way that says like, you're working with this because it is the best thing for your company, for your needs. And if it wasn't, like, well, you have access to your data, you have access to everything that you can understand about this platform and what you've trusted it with, and you can find other ways to do that should you want to do that. And that's just, I think, critical to building sustainable relationships. As an organization, we're fully distributed. So our workforce is kind of everywhere. We have no central office.
And 1,200 people.
1,200
people. All over the world.
All over the world.
No
every,
HQ.
Every time zone. No HQ.
Your HQ is your home.
But yeah.
Florida.
I work out of my home in Florida. Everyone's kind of got their thing here. We have one member of my team who lives in the Maldives. And it's just like we keep trying to figure
whoever
out
whoever that
to get
is,
to go.
They've got the right idea.
They've got the right.
He's winning.
He's doing distributed work. Core to those values are really, you know, what we think about is like opportunity is. It's just not evenly distributed, but talent really is. And so we're able to really open up to a much bigger part of the population and say, we've got some really interesting things that like you can do with technology that might typically be reserved for folks that live in major metropolitan areas. And you'd have to live in one of those areas to really be able to benefit from working there. And we're saying like, no,
not anymore.
Live in the Maldives and open up opportunities for folks that may have otherwise just not had those opportunities to do those sorts of things. And so that helps us build a more diverse workforce, brings
a better workforce,
you know, into this in the way we see it. And we're able to, it's through those diverse perspectives. It's through that open line of communication, that transparency that like our products just benefit from this. Our customers can benefit from this because it's not this homogenized sort of view on something that you're getting from one set of people in one market. It's just this global view on the software. That we're seeing there. So that's just really kind of core to who we are and in our values.
That was Nick Gernert, the CEO of WordPress VIP. If you want to find out more, visit WPVIP.com. And now let's get you back to Megan and Ibtihaj.
You've also done pretty well.
Done all right.
So tell me, how was the Olympic experience for you? It was interesting learning about, hopefully I can share this, but like your first junior Olympic experience did not go.
Are you
go.
Really taking it that far back?
Oh, we are totally done. We're doing all of that. But it wasn't what you had hoped for, right? And then to see that road and get to the Olympics, what was that experience like for you?
Well, I don't know how far back you're going, junior Olympics. Or if you meant like, I failed to qualify for my first Olympic team. So that was also a mess. Wow. But the Olympics to me still feels like it was yesterday. I can't believe we're on the heels of the next Olympic Games. It's still a pinch me moment in my life. It was something I worked really hard for. And I'm assuming that you read my book from what you're saying. But in my memoir, I just document a lot of the really difficult moments as an athlete. Particularly as an athlete of color on the U.S. fencing team, where it was a struggle. And so to have the opportunity to represent the United States at the pinnacle of sport was really the highlight of my life. And I know that I wouldn't be there without being resilient. And I feel like it's important to use our platforms to kind of share these stories and these journeys that are not as unique as we all think. You know, it's something that I feel like happened because I worked hard, but I share my story because I want, especially the youth out there, to know that you can have a similar story, a path of success, if you kind of ignore the people around you and you just do your own thing.
And it's interesting if we think about the people around you and the courage to be like, yeah, you know what? I don't care, I'm gonna show up the way I'm gonna show up. And then at the same time, you both have built really strong communities around you, whether it's family and friends that you rely upon, right? When training takes so much out of you or being on the road all the time takes a lot out of you, how do you take care of yourselves in those moments?
Self-care.
Yeah, as you can see, I'm hacking all over the place. I'm really sorry, I'm trying to hide it. I keep a pretty tight-knit group. And with that, always interested to talk to new people and get to know new people. But I feel like it's not that I don't care what anyone thinks, because I obviously do, but it's the people who I really get my feedback from are people that are going to be really honest with me. And so I think part of that self-care for me is like always getting that feedback. Like, am I sort of, you know, being true to myself? People that have known me a long time. I mean, part of what's interesting about this time is like, you know, anybody can just come up and like you know, tell you you're amazing. And there's a lot of people doing that right now. But like, what does that mean? You know, it's like, this person doesn't know me. They don't know me from like 10 years ago. So like, how many data points do they actually have about that for me personally to feel good about myself and what I'm doing? So I keep it pretty tight, and they are quick to let me know if I'm ever slipping. So. Great, thanks. Hi, Mom. Yeah. She's like, I just had a couple of things that I want to talk about. And then, yeah,
my
just
mom or your this, mom. That's
my both. Mom. Yeah, this is the proverbial mom. And then just from like a physical standpoint, I mean, we're on planes all the time, all over the place, drink lots of water, sleep, try to keep the alcohol to a minimum, and try, should probably not have any, but, you know, continue to work out. So just kind of trying to take it all in as well, and like realize this is an extraordinary time in my life, in that sense, but also it's just extraordinary. It's out of the ordinary. Like eventually it'll go back, but just trying to really enjoy this moment and, you know, also leverage it for the things that I feel like are good and worth the time and energy.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Yeah, similarly, I'm very appreciative of the moment. I think it's a very intentional practice to live my day with happiness. It's like my glass is always half full. I don't like, even in the face of everything that's going on, like, I mean, God forbid you turn on the news right now, but I still try to be positive because I
been pretty good these last couple days. Pretty exciting stuff.
I mean, it's like, is it a soap opera? Is this real? I mean, it's it's pretty juicy right now. But I really try to be appreciative of the moment. I realize that it's not something that's afforded to everyone. And just like Megan said, take advantage of the opportunity that's in front of you.
Totally. Soap operas aside, let's go back to the equal pay question.
Let's
do that.
Yes.
Right? How are we doing?
We're doing great. We feel, as we've always felt, very confident in our case and, you know, not just in all the legalities and the technical part of it, but just in general. Like, where are we going?
Yeah.
What are we doing here? Like, really, we're digging our heels in about this right now. The whole world is really shifting in a more equal direction. And so I'm not sure exactly what's holding up the other side or what the point. I feel a little bit like just in the weeds and kind of can't see the forest for the trees. But we feel good about where we are. Certainly the World Cup helped. We have a lot of public support and media support. But more than that, like, we have lived it and we know it and we know what is true and we know what's fair. And we're not going to stop until we get that. So we're pretty resolved in the way that we feel and feel confident and organized as a team. And we'll take whatever steps necessary to move forward. I mean, hopefully we don't have to go into litigation. No one really ever like wants to actually go to court. But, you know, if we have to, that's sort of what's on the table. So we feel good about where we are. We're always open to any conversations that can be had. I say this a lot, but they're the only team, or we're the only team they can have, and they're the only federation that we can have. So we're forever tied together, as much as we both love it. I always think, though, about the incredible force that could be if we were actually working together.
Yeah.
And that kind of actually what frustrates me and makes me the most sad and most pissed off is, like, you have an extraordinary group of women and you will always have that. The team will always be that person and those women. And, you know, they're seeing firsthand what it's like when we're organized and educated and together, and we're a pretty strong opponent, I would say. So just imagine, you know, if the goal is, you know, in a large sense to push the game forward and to serve the game and to grow the game in the United States, imagine if you could do that with 23 of the most powerful women, not only in the sport, but in culture and in our society right now. And you'll sort of always have those women. Like, imagine what we could do. I just feel like this is a stupid fight, and it's a waste of time and energy and money and brain power and resources and it all. And it's going against what the ultimate goal is for our team and for the Federation alike. So I'm looking forward to the day where it's over and we can actually get to the business. Mm-hmm. So there, yeah, thank you. Ball's in their court. Yeah. As Colin Kaepernick just said,
I was just,
ball is in their court.
Ball's in their court. Totally. I was thinking, you know, when you, sometimes when you stand up for something, you have to kneel. And you chose to do that as well. I was thinking actually by this time, since the workout was last weekend, that maybe mm-hmm. Colin Kaepernick would have landed with the team. That movie played out a little bit differently, but talk us through what went through your mind in terms of making that choice to kneel in order to stand up.
Honestly, I think it was just what I was saying before about we do actually have the capacity, while me not being Colin Kaepernick or not being a person of color who has experienced these things personally, as soon as I heard him speak and what he was saying, obviously seeing all the coverage about it, realizing how his message was being muddled purposely and in a racist fashion and in order to keep the status quo. I mean, as soon as I heard him speak and what he was saying, it's like, well, this shit's not happening. You know, we've just gone through such a violent and crazy summer in 2016. There was so many, you know, very public shootings caught on camera. There was also the five, you know, Dallas police officers who were sniped down, and it's sort of all this kind of same thing. And so right away, I was just like, oh, well, this makes sense. This is something that I can do. This is how I can show up. I've been in a position of asking people to show up for me, whether it be marriage equality or whatever it is, equal pay. So I was just like, oh, this will be an opportunity for me to show up and hopefully, you know, gain other people in support. I didn't think I'd be one of like two or three white athletes to show up. I feel like we really should be disappointed with ourselves as a whole with that. But yeah, I just felt like it was not something that I mulled over for a long time. As anyone in my life knows, I didn't discuss it with anyone. Not because I was hiding it, but just, you know, I just did it. It just was the right thing to do. And I think obviously in hindsight, I stand very firmly on that and still, you know, stand very firmly with Colin Kaepernick and everything that he stands for. But to me, it just goes back to, it's like, do I believe you or not? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And can I help you or not? Yeah. And if I believe you and there's a way for me to help you and you're not doing it, then like, that's
I'm
on
not,
you.
I'm not surprised that his story was spun in the way that it was, and also, also that people didn't show up in the same capacity, yeah. Right? It's shocking that we have these huge, you know, entities that exist, whether it be NBA, NFL, like soccer, whatever, and athletes have a choice, right? We have a choice, a conscious decision to show up for one another, mm-hmm. and not just like athlete to athlete, but like human to human. And I think that this is all driven, financially driven, the decisions that people make, because they don't want to lose endorsement deals, they don't want to lose their jobs if they don't have guaranteed contracts. So I think it's a lot of self that happens in the conversation, where people kind of talk themselves out of being allies and finding their footing in activism, which to me as an athlete who comes from a smaller sport, who is a person of color, it's so infuriating. So it's like, I mean, my mindset is that God has something written for you already. So like, why not just go out there and, you know, throw caution to the wind and show up for one another and stop being so self-absorbed. But and then again, in fencing, we don't make a lot of money. Yeah. Who's to say what I would do if I were LeBron? I don't know. I'd like to think that I would show up for other people. I really do. Yeah. I mean, I to me, it's like, like Megan said, it's not even that something that you consciously think about. You're like, well, of course I believe you. Of course.
Right.
I can actually see this person getting shot on camera by a police officer. There's no gray area. We see it unfolding in front of us, and it's a matter of like, what do we do? And also, to use the opportunity of everyone in this room, don't think that you have to be an athlete or you have to have a large platform to show up and be an ally. Like, if you have one follower, if you have a family that you sit across from at dinner, if you're a human being, you can actually show up for one another.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. that all the time because I think people feel a little bit paralyzed by the enormity of some of these problems mm-hmm. and what it's going to actually take to, you know, chisel into them. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't have to start an international organization to, like, actually affect the problem. Like you said, like, right. people will be going home for the holidays. Are you having those conversations? And the hardest conversations are the people that are right there next to you, that know you, that, you know, maybe you know they're a good person, but they're making an offhand comment. Are you going to say something? Because, mm-hmm. like, that's the problem, mm-hmm. is that in our own communities, in our own lives, we're not having those conversations. So then when it's time to stand up for someone you have no idea about, you don't know them, and it's time for you to put yourself out there to believe in someone else, it's like, and you can't even have that conversation with, you know, your uncle or aunt or whoever it is. Like, you can do those little steps, and, like, those make the biggest difference in society. Think if everybody was having those honest conversations in their households all the time, mm-hmm. then we go back into the world with that greater sense of empathy. Like, things would change so much quicker.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's right. You know, we think every day, time is this wonderful brand called Time for Kids, and what we pursue is, you know, how do we equip the youngest of our citizenship, right? With news literacy. How do you equip them with understanding what the truth looks like and the questions that you can ask? And I think about, you know, what are the messages that we can equip, again, our children with? And, like, and just seeing people start with the question, ask the question, right? Within your individual realm of family or your workplace or the club that you're with or anything like that, asking those questions. And I think what's important as the partnership to asking the questions is really being there to listen and just to be, have that empathy and to show up for each other. Fencing is such an interesting sport in this way. And just as you said, there might not be a lot of money in fencing right now. And also you're one of the very few people of color who are either on your college team. And so what was that journey like in terms of both asking those questions and listening in terms of how you move forward using fencing as a metaphor for showing up in the world?
Well, I struggle with this idea because I don't think that posing the question and should always fall on the back of minorities or, like, the oppressed
Agreed.
People, right?
Totally.
So my standpoint on this as an athlete was that I shouldn't have to carry this baggage with me when I'm competing. It's unfair. And I think that this idea, even as a Black athlete, that I have to be exceptional in order to be accepted, it's frustrating. And so my approach in sport, whether it be, like, my 10 years on the national team or, you know, my time at the Olympics, was just to show up as my best self as an athlete. So how well can I do, and let me focus on my craft, because that is an opportunity that's not given to everyone. And I worked for this, so I'm going to do this, right? I don't have time to try to check your racism or your bigotry
right.
because it's not my job. Like, clearly you're super ignorant, and it's not my time to kind of undo and understand why you're like this. I've never carried that burden with me. I'm like, it's too much.
Yeah.
And as someone who is often one of one in spaces, I'm sorry, I just don't have time.
Yeah.
Some days I have time, whether it be at the airport and having to check someone for being rude or racist or mm-hmm. whatever, I have time today. But most times,
I don't have time for your ass.
Yeah.
Cause you're rude.
Most times I feel like it's a form of self-care to just kind of, like, be able to exist in my own space and not have to constantly go behind and, you know, try to understand why someone is this way and use my opportunities as, like, very visibly Muslim woman or African American woman. Like, let me use this opportunity to show them that we're not the way that you think we're. I'm like, no, actually, you're ignorant. I don't have time.
Yeah.
But that's a choice that I make.
Okay.
Everyone's not like that. And I respect whoever has time. I personally don't. It's too much. It's like, it can be really overwhelming. And as an athlete who, my goal is to represent my country or myself well that day in competition. It's like, I mean, Megan can tell you, it's like you have too much going through your head, you know, game day, whether that be nerves, anxiety, focusing on whatever, you know, goal you have that day. You just, to add that layer, I think, can be really overwhelming.
Yeah. No, totally.
Yeah, we don't have time for the bullshit. Like, it's just, it is true. It's like you get to a point at least it, clearly we have, where I'm like, this is not my problem.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. You are not my problem. You can't burden me. Like, I'm passionate and I talk about a lot of things and I want to show up in those spaces. But to constantly be trying to deal with other people, like even like during the tournament, the president's tweets, I was like, do you think I have time to deal with this? Like, yeah. what is this actually? Like, this yeah. is not, these are words yeah. in a, it together.
Yeah.
But that's it. Like, I'm like, people like ask me all the time, like, how was that? Was it crazy? And it's like, I know it was crazy, but in the same sense, I'm like, I don't have time to deal with it. This is not even sentences, first of all. Like, right. You think I have time to deal with this on like the biggest stage of my life? Right. Like,
and didn't you have like a whole country to take care of?
I'm like, I don't, you also don't have time to be doing
right.
this. That's another story.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is just kind of like, no, I need to like focus on myself and actually what I'm doing will answer. I don't even know if there's question marks in there, but like whatever you're trying to do over here, like you can do that. But like, I'm actually busy. So.
I'm busy.
Yeah.
Booked and busy.
Booked and busy.
Right.
She's busy.
Look.
And I think, I mean, and that's, you know, that I personally really appreciate how you show up in the world, you know? And I just think that is what we can do the most. Every single person sitting yeah. in this room, everyone who's watching, people you know, and again, you sit across, like you sat at coffees or at dinners, that keeping ourselves, allowing ourselves to show up as who we are is the most powerful thing that we can do. And so I have to say, I have three little nephews, Benjamin, Colin, and Gunny, and I just could not be more proud that they are growing up in a world that the two of you are leading and driving and showing us how it's done. So if I can ask everyone to give a huge hand to...
Was Megan Rapinoe and Ibtihaj Muhammad, joined by Sue Su at Dreamforce 2019. I really liked what Megan said about allyship. She reminded us that being an ally is about having empathy. It's not necessarily about walking in someone else's shoes. It's about trusting what people say about their own experience. If you enjoyed this conversation and want more like it, be sure to hit subscribe on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast app. That'll do it for this episode of Blazing Trails. Thank you for listening. And thank you to WordPress VIP for presenting the show with us. Tune in next Thursday for more conversations from Dreamforce 2019.
Blazing Trails is a production of Salesforce, a customer relationship management solution committed to helping you deliver the personalized experiences customers want. So they'll keep coming back again and again. Salesforce, bringing companies and customers together. Visit salesforce.com/learn more.